Welcome to Back to Basics with Pastor Brian Broderson, an outreach ministry of Calvary Chapel, Costa Mesa, California. This program is designed to take you back to basic principles for living found in the Word of God.
So hey everybody, turn up your radio. Listen to your soul cry the question why song makes you hungry for something you never seen before.
Pastor Brian is currently teaching from the book of Romans and will be continuing today with part two of Without Excuse. So let's turn in our Bibles to Romans chapter 1, verse 20, as Pastor Brian takes us back to basics.
Today, we know that life, living systems, and we'll reduce it to cells, are extremely complex. And there are those today that talk about specified complexity and irreducible complexity. Specified complexity refers to the fact that something could only have been specifically designed for the very thing that it does. It could not have randomly developed that way. The design is too specified. It's too specific. You don't get specific, detailed, complicated pieces of machinery accidentally. Those things have to be thought out. They have to be planned out. They have to be drawn up. And then the blueprint has to be followed. And since that is what you have on the organic level, on the molecular level, this specified complexity, to theorize that specified complexity is really not specified, it's irrational and nonsensical. And then there's irreducible complexity. In irreducible complexity, the reason why that is an important thing to understand in regard to evolution, because the cells basically tell you the exact opposite of what the evolutionary theory tells you. The evolutionary theory tells you that things developed in a process over long, long periods of time. Irreducible complexity says this thing had to come into existence complete, because if you took one component of it away, it would no longer be what it is. It would no longer function. It would no longer do its job. So if you try to reduce the complexity, you lose the whole organism. So you can't have it developing throughout this long, long period of time. It just doesn't work that way. So this is what we know today. People know today that living systems are amazingly complicated. There's also something that we know today that, although to some extent, a person in ancient times could have, you know, figured this out to a certain degree, but we have been able to see it on a much greater level, and that is what is known as the anthropic principle, or the fine-tuning argument. And what that says is that the universe seems to have anticipated our arrival. We live in a universe that seems to have been prepared for us to be here. Anthony Flew, the man who became famous toward the end of his life for having converted from a life of atheism to being a theist, sadly To my knowledge, he never became a Christian. He died last year. But he wrote a book called There Is a God. And the subtitle was How the World's Most Notorious Atheist Changed His Mind. He writes about this anthropic principle. Listen to what he says. He says, imagine entering a hotel room on your next vacation. The CD player on the bedside table is softly playing a track from your favorite recording. The frame print over the bed is identical to the image that hangs over the fireplace at home. The room is scented with your favorite fragrance. You shake your head in amazement and drop your bags on the floor. You're suddenly very alert. You step over to the minibar, open the door, and stare in wonder at the contents, your favorite beverages, your favorite cookies and candy, even the brand of bottled water you prefer. You turn from the minibar then and gaze around the room. You notice on the desk it's the latest volume by your favorite author. You glance into the bathroom where personal care and grooming products are lined up on the counter, each one as if it was chosen specifically for you. You switch on the television. It is turned to your favorite channel. Chances are, with each new discovery about your hospitable new environment, you would be less inclined to think it was all a mere coincidence, right? You might wonder how the hotel managers acquired such detailed information about you. You might marvel at their meticulous preparation. You might even double check what all this is going to cost. But you would certainly be inclined to believe that someone knew you were coming. So he says this, the vacation scenario is a clumsy, limited parallel to the so-called fine-tuning argument. The recent popularity has highlighted a new dimension of the laws of nature. The more I examine the universe and study the details of its architecture, writes physicist Freeman Dyson, the more evidence I find that the universe, in some sense, knew we were coming. In other words, the laws of nature seem to have been crafted so as to move the universe toward the emergence and sustenance of life. This is the anthropic principle. So, you know, here's a guy who spends his entire life as an atheist, and not a closet atheist, but probably the most well-known atheist in the world. He was the one who gave the rest of the atheists their arguments against God. But it was these kinds of things, specified complexity, irreducible complexity, the anthropic principle, it was these kinds of things that caused him in the end to renounce his atheism. Now, like I said, you know, I don't know that he ever became a Christian. He was surrounded by some believers. They shared extensively with him. So hopefully in the last moments he opened his heart to the Lord. But the point is, this is what he said throughout the book. He said, I have always made it a point in life to follow the evidence wherever it leads. Regardless of where it goes, I'm going where the evidence leads. And basically what he said, he had to in the end renounce his atheism because the evidence brought him to the conviction that there had to be a creator. So this is what Paul is talking about here. Now, today we have scientific atheism is probably the clearest example of this kind of thing that Paul's writing about here in verse 20. That looking at the creation, seeing the complexity, seeing the design and everything else, scientific atheism rejects the idea of a creator. In a very recent article that came out, Stephen Hawking, interestingly, a man who a while back showed that matter is not eternal, and therefore there had to be a beginning, and that the beginning probably was very similar to what we read in the Bible. He and a few other guys are the ones that kind of, you know, really brought forth the and gave legitimacy, for those who believe it, to the Big Bang Theory. The only legitimate thing about the Big Bang Theory is it simply says that there is a point in time when everything came into existence. It did not exist eternally. So Hawking at one point said that, but now he's retracted that. And listen to what he says now. Recent advances in cosmology suggest the laws of gravity and quantum theory allow universes to appear spontaneously from nothing. Spontaneous creation is the reason there is something rather than nothing, why the universe exists, why we exist. It is not necessary to invoke God to light the blue touch paper and set the universe going. Our universe seems to be one of many, each with different laws. The multiverse idea is not a notion invented to account for the miracle of fine-tuning. It is a consequence predicted by many theories in modern cosmology. If it is true, that's a big, giant if right there. If it is true, it reduces the strong anthropic principle to the weak one, putting the fine-tunings of physical law on the same footing as the environmental factors. For it means that our cosmic habitat, now the entire observable universe, is just one of many. Each universe has many possible histories, many possible states. Only a very few would allow creatures like us to exist. Although we are puny and insignificant on the scale of the cosmos, this makes us, in a sense, the lords of creation. So here's a guy who's obviously a very brilliant person, but yet he says existing laws have shown us that everything could have come into being without their existence. So what he is arguing here in a sophisticated way is that nothing created everything. And he says the laws of gravity and physics have told us that. Well, those laws didn't exist if there was nothing. So how could those non-existent laws teach us anything about what happened before they existed? So, you know, he's brilliant on one level, but obviously so against the idea of a creator that he's now going to this point of absurdity. And now this is the newest thing in cosmology, the idea that there are multiverses, that there are an unlimited number of universes. And why do you need an unlimited number of universes? Because if you have an unlimited number of universes, then you enhance the possibility of things happening in those. It's the same argument, really, as, you know, given enough time, anything can happen. Everything could have come together in all of its complexity if there was just enough time. We don't need a creator. We don't need a designer. We don't need somebody putting it together. Just give it enough time and it would all come together itself. So now we're going to go beyond time and we're going to theorize that there are multiverses. Has anybody ever seen anything outside of our universe? Of course not. You couldn't get out of our universe. And so it's all speculative. It's all theoretical. And it's all wishful hoping based on just the absolute refusal to acknowledge that there is a creator. I used this quote a while back from Dawkins. I'll use it again. It's a similar kind of a thing going at it from a different angle. The world is divided into things that look as though somebody did not design them. Wings and wagon wheels, hearts and televisions, and things that just happen through the unintended workings of physics, mountains and rivers, sand dunes and solar systems. Charles Darwin discovered a way in which the unaided laws of physics, the laws according to which things, I love this, just happen, could, in the fullness of geologic time, come to mimic deliberate design. So that's the law. The law is the law of it just happened. Does that sound sophisticated and radically scientific to you? The law of it just happened. That's the law that Dawkins is referring to here. So he says this, the illusion of design is so successful that to this day, he's really mad at Americans about this, that to this day most Americans, including significantly many influential and rich Americans, stubbornly refuse to believe it is an illusion. So it's all an illusion. The wings and the wagon wheels and the hearts and the televisions, they came about just the same way that the mountains, the rivers, the sand dunes, and the solar system came about, he says. And he says it all came about just through geologic time. Given enough time, billions of years, it just brought itself together. Now, I want to quote two more evolutionists. And these two guys are in the same position, except they're honest. I've used this quote many times before. It's one of my favorite ones. It's by George Wald. George Wald was a Harvard biochemist. And this is what he said. I like his honesty. He said, one only has to contemplate the magnitude of this task to concede that the spontaneous generation of living organisms is impossible. So the idea that, you know, nothing produced everything, he said, it's obviously impossible. Yet we are here, now this is where it gets really crazy, as a result, I believe, of spontaneous generation. It's impossible, but that's how we got here. When it comes to the origin of life, he says, there are only two possibilities, creation or spontaneous generation. There is no third way. Spontaneous generation, listen to this, was disproved 100 years ago. But that leads us to only one other conclusion, that of supernatural creation. And now listen, here's where he's honest. We cannot accept that on philosophical grounds. Therefore, we choose to believe the impossible that life rose spontaneously by chance. The guy's honest. He's honest. He says this isn't a scientific argument. Science does not help us here. This is a philosophical issue. That's exactly what Christian apologists have been saying all the while along. This isn't a scientific argument. This is a philosophical argument. There are many absolutely brilliant people with the same education, with the same degrees, from the same universities, who believe that God is the creator. So it's not science. It's a philosophical issue. And he says, on philosophical grounds, we can't accept that. And again, Huxley at least is honest here. In regard to evolution, he said, this was Thomas Huxley, we didn't embrace evolution because it seemed scientifically viable. We embraced it because it gave us freedom to live the way we wanted to live. So that's what we're talking about here. We're talking about Romans 1. Because that which may be known of God is manifest in them, for God has shown it to them. For since the creation of the world, his invisible attributes are clearly seen, being understood by the things that are made. By the things that are made. You see, creation is God's general revelation to mankind of his existence. That's what Psalm 19 tells us. The heavens declare the glory of God. You know, sometimes people wonder, well, you know, why are the heavens so vast? Why are there so many billions of stars? Well, one of the reasons is they're declaring the glory of God. You look at that and you say, that is astounding. That is, it's inconceivable. It's incomprehensible. Especially if you get to know a little bit about, you know, the distances of these stars, the size of these stars. It's mind-boggling stuff. But the heavens declare the glory of God, and the firmament or the sky shows his handiwork. And then it says this, remember, day unto day utters speech, night unto night speaks forth knowledge. Every day God is speaking through what? He's speaking through the day. There's another day. Every morning when we wake up and the sun is coming up, God's speaking to us. How does this all happen? Why does it just do what it does? It doesn't. It does it because there's a creator and a sustainer. Day into day utter speech, night into night shows forth knowledge. And then it says this, there is no speech nor language in which their voice is not heard. See, this is God's universal testimony to man of his existence. Creation is the universal testimony. Creation is God's general revelation. Atheism and agnosticism are inexcusable. Atheism and agnosticism are inexcusable. Paul says that right here, so that they are without excuse. You see, God gave man the power of reason. No other creature has this ability to reason. This is, of course, because God made us in his image. But he gave us the power to reason, and he holds us accountable to reason correctly. So when a man looks at creation, and he looks at intricate design, and he looks at specified complexity and irreducible complexity, and he says, that's not designed, that is the wrong conclusion. That will bring the judgment of God upon that person. So when a man does that, he's drawing the exact opposite conclusion of what his reasoning powers were intended for. But even though that's the case, God is offering forgiveness, even to people who have been in that position, even people who have been entrenched in that position, even people who have promoted that position. God is offering them grace. That's what this whole thing is about. Remember, Paul is telling us, again, in the context, he's not ashamed of the gospel. He's ready to come and preach the gospel. Because the gospel is the power of God to salvation, because the only alternative is the wrath of God. If people don't receive the gospel, they will experience the wrath. But everyone can receive the gospel. Anyone can receive the gospel. And there are some wonderful and amazing and powerful testimonies of Dawkins-type people who have come to their senses and repented and humbled themselves and finally acknowledged that there is a God and that Jesus is Lord. And that's what the bigger message is here in these verses. As Paul goes to build the case, he's building the case to show man his absolute helplessness in regard to this issue of having his sin taken care of and coming out from under the wrath. He's building the case to show him this is why there's a gospel. This is why Christ came. And so as we carry on in chapter 1, as we pick up in our next study, we're going to follow Paul's line of thought here as he shows that the world is under the wrath of God, as he shows that these certain people and lifestyles and so forth that he's going to mention here in the context, that these are all things that bring people under God's wrath. And again, why is he showing that? Because no one's going to look for a savior until they realize they're in trouble. No one's going to want to be found until they realize they're lost. No one's going to want their sin forgiven as long as they don't see themselves as a sinner. So, before the gospel can really come to us in its power, we first of all have to come under the conviction of sin. And that happens in a variety of different ways, but that's what Paul is dealing with here. in the context.
We'll return with more insightful lessons from the book of Romans in our next lesson as Pastor Brian continues with part one of God Gave Them Up. But right now, I'd like to remind you that if you missed any part of this study, or perhaps you'd like to review it again at a more convenient time, you can do so by simply calling us toll-free at 1-800-733-6443 and request the message entitled Without Excuse. Or if you prefer, simply refer to it by resource number B0107. Once again, our toll-free number is 1-800-733-6443. Pastor Brian would also love to connect with you online, and he can be found at facebook.com/Pastor Brian Broderson. Also on Twitter at twitter.com/Brian Broderson. And for those of you that prefer to write, you can address your correspondence to Back to Basics, P.O. Box 8000, Costa Mesa, California, 92628. And when writing or calling, be sure to ask for a free catalog of available resources from Back to Basics, and please include the call letters of this station with your correspondence. You're also invited to visit our website at backtobasicsradio.com, where you can listen to archived messages by Pastor Brian or subscribe to our podcasts. Once again, that's backtobasicsradio.com.
Turn up your radio.
Back to Basics is sponsored by Calvary Chapel of Costa Mesa, California.